Please pray with me. Creator God, we thank you so much for this beauty that is surrounding us and the love that indwells us and your spirit that accompanies us. Let me decrease so that you might increase. Amen. So first of all, I just want to thank you for inviting me and having me stand here breathing with a little heart palpitation, but accepting me nonetheless. It is very nice. I've lived in Oakland before seminary for about 12 years, but I've never had an opportunity to come to Montclair, so I'm very happy to finally be able to come and enjoy the service with you all. So I admit that I was a little anxious when I first got the invitation because I was unfamiliar with the church, kind of familiar with the neighborhood, but not really of your community here. So because it's 2012, there's the internet, and what a wonderful resource that is, because I was able to legally be a voyeur and go to your website and peek in on what all you all are doing here, the ministries you're involved in, and the opportunities for ministry. And I got the feeling that this was a nice place. A place that promotes acceptance and security, despite my feet shuffling a little bit. And as I was on your website, I came across this newsletter, and in this newsletter, there was a pastoral letter to the congregation. It was filled with gratitude. Your pastor's looking at me like, uh-oh, what have I done? This is a good thing. It was filled with gratitude, awareness, forgiveness, and love. And while reading it, I was drawn into my own virtual understanding of your lives here together, toggling back and forth with an outsider's interpretation, and I thought it a great testament to the foundation of love and trust that manifested itself in that transparency. And to me, transparency means that mistakes can happen, where judgment is not necessarily the only outcome, that openness is welcome and encouraged, where growth and reconciliation are not only possible but anticipated. So I took that into account, along with whatever else your pastor told me, and I got a general kind of view of what I was getting myself into, and I determined two things. One, that I could be myself, as you can see, because that's a wonderful thing, to stand before God's people as your true, authentic self. And the other thing that I determined was that I would be preaching on love. And what a wonderful morning for that. So I've spent some time now offering back to you what you already know about you. And some of you may be wondering if all of that was really necessary. And I think that it is invaluable, because sometimes we take for granted who we are and or how or who others perceive us to be. The writer of this morning's epistle to the church in Colossae is writing in part in response to a mood or movement towards a change in behavior or philosophy, and it doesn't really talk about exactly what that is. But it's the writer's intention to persuade or encourage the hearers to continue to act in ways that are grounded in what they already know has great value. In other words, he's basically reinforcing in them that no matter what happens or who they might acquaint themselves with in the future, they should remember who they are and what their core values are. So as I reviewed the text, I couldn't help but think of you. There was this part about making allowances for each other's faults and forgiveness, peace and thankfulness in the community. But what jumped out at me in my translation was verse 14. And the most important piece of clothing you must wear is love. Love is what binds us all together in perfect harmony. Verse 12 also talks about clothing. Clothe yourselves with what are considered to be five virtues that are required for harmonious living in a community: tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. But remember, the most important piece of clothing you must wear is love. And the New Interpreter's Bible Commentary further explains, love acts as a bond not only for the other virtues, but also the community in which they are displayed. Perfection, then, is not some individually gained state, but a corporate one achieved in a relationship of love. I recalled hearing a similar phrase somewhere before, something about wearing your heart on your sleeve. Is that familiar? That phrase actually is compliments of Shakespeare. Apparently, before a jousting match, knights would wear the colors of their beloved on their sleeve so that everyone would know who they were fighting for or who owned their heart. And somehow that idea has evolved into an understanding that making your emotions known in this risky and vulnerable way in a society like ours today is considered a sign of weakness. After all, why would anyone go into the world with their vulnerabilities showing? It started me wondering about how this important piece of clothing might look. Maybe that thought automatically brings to mind a visual image, but I meant it from a greater depth. How would it look for me to wear this very important clothing today? I mean, I agree with the idea of how important love is, but it concerns me in a big way because lately I've been, and maybe you have been too, I've been confronted with what is going on in politics. It's a daily bombardment. And what happened at the General Assembly of our National Church about 2 weeks ago has also been the forefront of my mind. You see, I'm affected by Facebook. I'm one of those people, my goal was to have no more than 100 friends. And I'm kind of close to that. Went to a dinner party the other night, and, you know, one of the taboos of dinner parties, don't bring up politics. Well, it happened. And I heard one of my friends say, well, you know, I get my news from Facebook. And many of you others might be guilty too, correct? Yes? You don't have to tell on yourselves. But in these news feeds that I'm reading, and I realize I have this range of friends. I have my oldest, I'm going to say acquaintance now, from second grade. I mean, Facebook is wonderful in that way. But I have friends that I've kind of collected throughout my lifetime. And as I've started to read these news feeds, I begin to see just how different we all are, what our differing views are. And some of them are posting very troubling messages and endorsements. So I wonder, as this presidential election nears, when the election is over, where would our friendship be? And at the General Assembly, the news feeds that I was reading was about this vice moderator who resigned. And she resigned because of the monumental disruptions that were caused by the backlash of disappointment and displeasure and hatred for her decision to sign the marriage license of a same-sex couple in a state where that was legal. It was clear that they showed their opposition in ways that were not examples of loving one another as Christians. I was grieving for the church that week. And as I have been grieving for the church, I've also been grieving for our country. I agree with the principles of free speech and each person having a right to their own opinion, but I realize that what is revealed in the exercising of that freedom is not just a political predisposition, but the surfacing of embedded ideologies. And if they get their way, those who will go without will no longer be anonymous, faceless statistics. They will be people who look like the people we serve and minister to, or they might even look like us. Or in the case of the General Assembly, there are the people that we encourage to join us in church, only to limit their acceptance with harsh words and bullying. So my question becomes, how do we love those who act in this way? It would seem that wearing this important clothing is more than a casual notion. Our embedded ideologies, theologies, psychologies, and whatever manifest themselves in ways that may or may not seem rational or congruent with the ordinary interactions we have with others. In fact, our explicit actions may be antagonistic to our implicit ones. Here's a simple example. You're a nice person, easy to talk to, and you can keep a confidence. You tell someone you've befriended recently to call you anytime. Has anybody ever heard that? But when they do call, either you don't answer or you give them an excuse to end the call quickly. And this happens every time they call. So hopefully at some point you realize that your explicit message is that you always welcome conversation and can be counted on to always be available. However, the implicit message is that you really don't want to be bothered. And if that assessment is not what you intended, you can adjust the messages to reflect who you are more accurately. But in order to do that, you have to be honest with yourself and willing to make the adjustment. So we all do wear love. In some way or another, whether we recognize it or not, we do. We have to use our imaginations to consider how we wear it, and if that conclusion is our intention. How can we make sure that our explicit and implicit messages coincide with one another? Jesus said, and this is a paraphrase from Luke chapter 6, Jesus said that it is easy to love those who love you. But he also said that we must love those who are against us and expect nothing in return. I was thinking about the functionality of clothing and its possible types. I came up with four types, and I know there's more. My thoughts are not an indictment of any of them, but I think they are possible answers to the question of how we wear love. The first item is the accessory. This kind of love accentuates what you have going on at the moment. It may be interchangeable with other accessories. It may be used as a tool of embellishment. This kind of love might be designed to make you look good. Then there's the costume or uniform. This kind of love is displayed only on certain occasions or only with select individuals, so it is considered seasonal or theme-oriented. The costume is temporary and may only be worn once, so it becomes a feel-good memory to draw upon with old friends. The uniform identifies the wearer as part of a particular group, which comes with presumptions of involvement and or rules of engagement. And in both cases, this type of clothing, costume or uniform, can mask the real you and allow you the freedom of being someone you are not. And the next one, the undergarment. This kind of love is shielded. It is close to your core and kept safely out of sight, not easily accessible to casual acquaintances. It may not be hidden on purpose, but may be protected as the result of insecurity, fatigue, busyness, or habit. I learned the hard way that this was an unfortunate default for me when I got caught up in my own stuff. Ordinarily, I think of myself as considerate and caring. I go out of my way to treat people like people, with respect. But I had a real life experience that showed me my love was shielded. A few years back, I had to pick up my daughter from dance rehearsal. The dance studio was in the heart of the Mission District in San Francisco. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Mission District, but if you've ever been to the ballpark, it's like being on that corner, right? You know, Willie Mays Plaza right there, all this hustle and bustle. Well, on that day, the traffic was congested, the parking was horrific, the pigeons ruled, and every variety of person was out and about, from young people waiting for the bus or BART to street vendors, people on the corner with bullhorns shouting out their political agendas, drug dealers locked up in the public restrooms making deals, suspicious shop owners, thrifty customers, thousands of people all occupying some small space amidst this four-corner melting pot of an intersection. This is a snapshot of the world we live in. I happened to be a little early that day, blessed with a parking space, and as soon as I got there, so I decided to go to the Chinese restaurant and donut shop next door to the studio to pick up dinner. See, I was a commuter person, a commuter single mom, so every little moment where there was some access to doing something easier, I was for that. So while I was standing in line, contemplating my day, it was at the end of just a really horrific day, working 60 hours a week. Your pastor might know something about working so many hours. But while I was standing in line, looking over their menu and hot tray items, this man walks up and stands behind me, rustling coins that he had in his hand. I had had just a really long day, and I was tired, didn't want to be bothered. And I just knew for some reason that he was going to talk to me, and sure enough, he did. Immediately, I had to look past his disheveled, unclean clothing, the dirty face and hands, and the unkempt hair to hear what he was trying to say to me. I admit I was not comfortable. His hands were trembling, and I thought, alcoholic. His voice choppy, I thought, homeless alcoholic. And he showed me the coins in his shaking hand, and he began to ask me for money, and I thought, homeless alcoholic who's bothering me for money to buy some booze. He then said that he had been saving money for 3 days, that he was hungry, and that he knew exactly what kind of soup he was going to get because he got it all the time, and all he needed was a little over a dollar, and could I please help him because he was hungry. I have this practice of just buying food instead of giving money because that was the loving thing to do. And in thinking that, I thought, that's a saving grace. At least I'm doing something right. When I asked him which soup so that I could complete the order, he must have thought that I didn't believe that he really wanted soup. So he decided to describe the soup to me, the container, and how good it tasted. And all I could do was be irritated that it was taking him so long to just tell me what soup it was. Finally, the counter person was able to take my order, and I pointed to the man and said, include his soup. So while we stood there waiting, you know, that awkward time, waiting for the order to be filled, he looked over at me and he said, I'm a Christian. And in that moment, I was ashamed because I had already judged who he was and what he was about. And when I heard those words, my heart was convicted. And in that moment, I asked him, are you a praying man? And he said, yes, ma'am, I pray every night. And I looked at him and I said, would you pray for me? He looked back at me, surprised, I thought. But there was something in his eyes that let me know that we both had reclaimed his humanity. He was no longer just this person that I had put a label on. And in that moment, I realized that God had given us a gift of peace and a mirror to what God's love looks like. We were transformed in that moment from two people who were operating independently of each other and lost in the world to two people who were of the same mind in Christ. And the power of God, the redemptive act of caring, convicted me. As I handed him his soup, he promised me that he would pray for me. He blessed me and thanked me and then thanked me again. And my encounter with him blesses me still 6 years later today. And then there's the fourth type of clothing. The old, familiar, comfy favorite. Can anyone think of a favorite article of clothing that you might have? What's it like? How do you feel when you're wearing it? Some examples of alternative descriptors of this comfy, familiar clothing. Security, snug, more than adequate, spacious, easy, transparent, faithful. When we wear our favorite sweater or shirt or slippers or whatever, we are probably our most authentic selves. We are more relaxed, more complete, more inclined to listen, and maybe even more confident, more cautious, more protective, more appreciative. Somehow there is something about the presence of this thing that envelops us and just makes us feel good. It's transformative or maybe restorative. But in any case, I think this is the metaphorical representation I will bear in mind when I think of wearing love. We can wrap up those five virtues, tenderhearted mercy, gentleness, humility, kindness, and patience in our favorite clothing of love. That is the way to love those we love. That is the way to love those who are against us. We can love them gently while we let them know that we disagree with their opinions. We can show mercy and humility when we love them enough to tell them their behavior is unacceptable. Love will help us to be patient and kind, to forgive and reconcile, and to always be thankful. How will you wear love? Amen.